It's a little bit past halfway through the second hour of the Legal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday, May 28th. Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, and Rory McGoran joining you. And joining us from the San Jose Mercury News is Curtis Pichelka. He's going to be covering the Stanley Cup Final for the Mercury News. Curtis, thanks for joining us.
Having me.
It's our pleasure, and you know, we were talking earlier, Ezzy and I were talking earlier, Curtis, you know, if you were to say, okay, prior to the playoffs, never mind the season, prior to the playoffs, if the final was going to be San Jose, if you predicted San Jose-Pittsburgh, somebody would have thought you were crazy. and that's what it is, the Sharks against the Penguins. Before we get into the previewing the final, talk about the series against the St. Louis Blues and the atmosphere within the Shark Tank there. Had you ever seen it like that before?
I mean, not this year at least. I think the last time I might have heard it like that was just prior to the last playoff series, 2014, maybe even 2013, against the Kings in the second round they played in 2013. That was really loud. Everybody was pumped up. Everyone was figuring that was going to be a big series, and the Sharks had a really good chance to win that one and possibly move on to the conference finals. But I'll tell you, the last minute of that of Game 6 against the Blues, that was about as loud as I can remember it, for sure.
Well, Curtis, we've had you on the show many times this year. We've had you on throughout the playoffs, and we've talked to you many times about the San Jose Sharks defense that I think was pretty underrated before the season and certainly before the playoffs started. When you look at who San Jose has defeated in the Stanley Cup playoffs, LA in the first round shutting down their big guns, Nashville shutting down their big guns, and then St. Louis shutting down Vladimir Tarasenko specifically until with about 10 minutes to go when he scored a couple of goals for the St. Louis Blues. When you look at the Pittsburgh Penguins, they present a different challenge for the San Jose Sharks. They're firing on all cylinders, the HBK line, Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin. Is it going to come down to shutting down Pittsburgh's top guns? Because you know San Jose is going to get their goals.
Right. I think, you know, if you pair Vlasic and Braun against, say, like you said, the HBK line or Crosby's line, whoever, you know, whatever you kind of decide to do, I think if you can at least eliminate one of those two lines or at least slow them down a little bit, it'll give the Sharks a much better chance. If it becomes a situation where, you know, Pittsburgh's getting, you know, three or four goals a game, it's going to be real tough for the Sharks. They're at their best when they can hold the opponent to maybe two goals or less. And, you know, obviously, like you said, get the offense chipping in with three goals or more. So the key, I think, is just to kind of just slow down at least one of those lines and maybe force that Bonino line to sort of, you know, sort of carry the load kind of thing. If you could take out, you could kind of maybe slow down Crosby. You can't completely shut him down, I know that. But if you could at least slow him down and at least force some other lines to carry the load, the Sharks, I think, will be in a much better position, but easier said than done. I mean, this is an offense that is going to be the best they've faced so far. So interesting to see kind of how Pete DeBoer, manages things, how he wants to go about, how he wants to, you know, utilize Vlasic and Braun in the series. It should be fun. It should be a real chess match between him and Mike Sullivan, for sure.
Do you think Pete DeBoer coached Ken Hitchcock last round?
It's tough to say. I mean, I think Ken pulled every trick he had. He played every card he could. It was just a matter of, I think, the Sharks, like you mentioned, the depth on defense, I think, presented some problems. And the style of game that the Sharks played, a real tight-checking kind of game, mm-hmm. Won a lot of battles along the wall, cycled the puck. Some pretty goals for sure, but a lot of kind of dirty, kind of greasy goals around the net too. You saw Joel Ward come big, come alive in the last couple of games of that series. That's kind of what his trademark is getting those kind of goals in the playoffs. So, I wouldn't go as far as to say that DeBoer outcoached Hitchcock. I think he more than held his own, but Hitchcock, he tried everything he could. He just switching goalies, maybe bringing some guys in the lineup here and there. But at the end of the day, I think the Sharks are just a better team.
Joined by Curtis Pashelka of the San Jose Mercury News, previewing the Sharks-Penguins Stanley Cup Final, which gets underway on Monday. You know, we were talking earlier in the show, Curtis, about the Sharks and how, in my opinion at least, they took advantage of the St. Louis Blues, and Los Angeles Kings, especially skating-wise, those two teams, and think could keep up at times. Do you think that advantage will be offset by the Penguins, and is it even possible that the Penguins may outskate the Sharks?
I think up front, I mean, they can definitely match up. I mean, the forwards, you know, their speed and what they present, the problems they can bring to the Sharks, especially in the Sharks zone, and that's going to be a huge thing. But Pittsburgh's a little thin on defense. Mm-hmm. With Daly going out, Chris Letang has had to carry a big load for them, and it'll be, I think the Sharks, you know, if they could, kind of exploit a little bit, you know, the Pens D. I know, you know, Murray's been playing real well. They want to try to test him a little bit more than maybe he has been throughout the playoffs here. But I'll tell you what, Murray's playing real well right now, and I was thinking, you know, he's a guy like, you know, he doesn't. He's not going to give you like a ten out of ten like Fleury might give you, but he's going to give you a bunch of sevens and eights and nines. Just give him a chance to win every game, and that's gets consistent goaltending. I think that's something that, you know, maybe St. Louis struggled with a little bit in this series. So I think like you said, the speed, I think that's going to present some problems for the Sharks. But I think also the Sharks trying to utilize their forecheck, maybe try to wear down some of the Penguins defenders. That could be a pretty big deal too in this series, I think.
Curtis, we've got one final question for you. We know you have to jump on a plane headed for Pittsburgh. When you look at the series, is it pretty safe to say that the big storyline here is going to be Patrick Marleau, Joe Thornton, the San Jose Sharks team as a whole being in their first Stanley Cup final, knowing how hard it is to get to a Stanley Cup final, and that being kind of the maybe what really pushes this team to win their first ever Stanley Cup?
I think it's so. I think it's going to be a big storyline throughout the series here. And you look at those guys. I mean, Thornton is playing as well as he has in the last maybe 5 or 6 years, and obviously just getting named to the Team Canada World Cup team yesterday, just an indication of how well he's been playing and how well he's thought of kind of throughout the league. A guy like Marleau, he's obviously on the back of the second line with Logan Couture now. The Sharks, I think, are definitely part of their motivation. Is to try to get those guys their first cup, but also knowing that those guys, you know, they're not just symbolic figures in this series. They're gonna have to play a pretty big key role for the Sharks to win this series, because I think it's gonna be a long one. I think it's gonna be a real grind for both teams. Obviously, the travel is gonna figure into it a little bit as well. So
for you too,
a little bit, but it's. I don't know. I just say, you look at Marleau and Thornton, the way they're playing right now. If they can kind of continue that, I think the Sharks will be in good shape.
Leave it there, Curtis. Sounds like, you know, I think the Sharks certainly have more than a chance and very well may take home the cup that Joe Thornton's been lusting after for his whole career. Enjoy the series very much, and thanks for joining us.
No problem. Sorry to cut it a little short here. If you guys want to do it again next week, just let me know.
That's all right. We'll do.
Have a safe flight, Curtis.
Safe flight, Curtis.
Thanks a lot.
When we come back, a rare trade this week. Eric Gudbrandsson.
Love it.
Traded to the Vancouver Canucks for Jared McCann. Some picks involved. We will break that down after the break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
The Florida Panthers are proud to select from the Kingston Frontenacs, Eric Gudbrandsson.
That was Dale Talon calling out the name of Eric Gudbrandsson.
Good, solid defenseman.
Back with the 2011 draft?
2010.
2010 draft, sorry.
Yep. He went right after Taylor Hall and Tyler Seguin.
That's right. Seguin and Hall, and what is it now? The top five of the six, five of the top six players in that draft have been traded or on different teams? Except for Taylor Hall. Seguin, Gudbrandsson, Nino Niederreiter, all these guys have changed teams. Really interesting.
Taylor Hall probably didn't like the announcement of the Canadian World Cup roster.
Yeah, or going on the left wing up against Eric Gudbrandsson on the right side defense, they're going to be a little more difficult physically. Before we get into it, Ezzy, the segment's brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
You know, you're right, Rich. Going back to that 2010 NHL draft, the year before the Jets came back, Eric Gudbrandsson has been traded. Obviously, Tyler Seguin, number two overall, was traded.
Yep.
Ryan Johansson's been traded. Nino Niederreiter, Brett Connolly. It's incredible. And then you remember that was the draft. Jeff Skinner was taken seventh overall, and then he won the Calder Trophy. But that draft, actually, we've talked about it on the show before, how deep that draft is. You had Jaden Schwartz going 14th overall to the St. Louis Blues. Mm-hmm. You had Tarasenko going 16th overall to the St. Louis Blues. 19th, I believe it was Nick Bjugstad going to Florida. Sheahan at 21 to Detroit. Kuznetsov, 26th overall to Washington. That was a really good draft year. Just wanted to get that in there.
There you go. Trade this week, though. So, you know, you don't usually see trades before the season is over, but you did this case, and I'll just review the trade if people aren't aware of the details of it. Eric Gudbrandsson and a fifth-round pick went from the Florida Panthers, to the Vancouver Canucks for a former first-round pick, Jared McCann, a 2016 second-round pick, and a 2016 fourth-round pick. Ezzy, my first question is, how surprised were you that Eric Gudbrandsson got moved?
Not that surprised, considering that the Florida Panthers have other players coming up to sign. And it looks like Brian Campbell, by the way, we'll ask George Richards about it, but it looks like Brian Campbell might not be back in Florida either, which is a little bit surprising to me that both of those guys aren't back. Mm-hmm. Like, I can understand, okay, Gudbrandsson's moved because you want to find some room to sign Brian Campbell, but right after the trade happened, Richie, I mentioned this to you. I think the emergence of Mike Matheson had something to do with it. Mike Matheson was really good for Canada at the World Championships, and I thought he was very impressive. I know you saw the Panthers play a couple times this year, and I saw them play once against the Jets in Florida. I was very impressed by Mike Matheson, good skater. He's been a top prospect for the Florida Panthers for a while.
He was named defenseman of the tournament, I believe.
He might have been.
Yes, I believe he was. Yeah,
yeah, but a good, solid defenseman. But, you know, I can see why Vancouver's making this trade. Dan Hamhuis is probably not coming back.
Yeah, I mean, you heard Jim Benning this week talk about how the door's not closed there, but it sounds like the door's closed there.
Right, and if you're Jim Benning, and I realize, you know, a lot of people were criticizing this trade, saying that Florida really won this trade. That remains to be seen. Hey, I like the trade for Florida, but I can see what Vancouver's doing there as well. That defense, you remember back in 2011, Rich, when the Vancouver Canucks, that was 5 years ago, when the Vancouver Canucks went to the Stanley Cup Finals against the Boston Bruins. That defense was excellent with Alex Edler and Kevin Bieksa and Dan Hamhuis, of course. I believe they had Keith Ballard back then, too. Maybe not. That might have been after then. But needless to say, that Vancouver Canucks defense was one of the main. It was a solid defense. It was a top five defense, top 10 defense at the very least in the NHL. And now you look at that defense, you take Dan Hamhuis out of there. It's not a very good defense.
Well, this is your top four, right? Your top four right now would be Edler coming back from injury and Tanev.
Yep.
And then it would be Hutton.
Yep.
And Gudbrandsson.
Hutton played for Canada at the World Championships
but Matheson,
as well.
Matheson, you know, got passed. If you went into the tournament, you would have thought Hutton would have played more than Matheson, I think, and then Matheson played more than Hutton. Having said that, you still see Hutton is lining up on the second pairing right, left side, and then you have Gudbrandsson now playing on the right side.
And Gudbrandsson, a guy, as we talked about, we played it at the top of the segment, you know, drafted third overall, but when he was drafted, he wasn't an offensive dynamo. I mean, Eric Gudbrandsson is a defensive defenseman.
That's
He's
right.
a big punishing guy. He can drop the gloves. I know that style of defenseman maybe isn't as common these days in the NHL. But I still think that he can skate.
Yeah.
He's a good player. So for the Vancouver Canucks, when you're looking at the other teams that you're going to be competing against in your own division, so you're talking about the LA Kings, the Anaheim Ducks, the Oilers, the Flames, you need to have a big, solid defenseman back there that can play, right? So he's a guy that can play 20-plus minutes a game, maybe 25 minutes a game. So I can see what Vancouver's doing. On the other hand, Jared McCann's a good player. He had a decent rookie season, struggled a little bit at times, but he's a big body. He can shoot the puck. So when you throw that into the Florida Panthers mix, looks like Vincent Trocheck is probably going to sign long-term there. And, you know, throwing guys like Barkov, Bukestad, Jager's coming back for another year. I mean, that Florida Panthers team is an up-and-coming team. So Jared McCann will go right in. The issue, I think, that the Canucks had with Jared McCann is they didn't think that he was going to play a top-six role next year.
Right, or I mean, they looked at you heard Jim Benning talk about it, and he said, you know, we have Horvat, and we have Sutter, and we have Sedin.
Right.
And then it sounds like they're leaning towards Dubois if he's available at the five spot. So he says, Jim Benning says there's two forwards and one defenseman they're kind of targeting. So if you say it's Dubois, I know you made the Habs might want to get in there. I don't think the Oilers go forward again, but they might trade down, and maybe somebody jumps in and takes them. But I think he looked at it and said, okay, we have a bunch of centers going to be on this squad. So McCann, even though he played wing this year, is more of a center, and he's expendable.
Well, it's interesting, Rich, too, because I think we both agree Vancouver's at the beginning stages of a rebuild, right? Like this team, I don't think I don't think it's a playoff team next year. When you look at the other teams in their division, and then you look at a team like the Winnipeg Jets, who's gotten better just by getting the second overall pick,
right.
I don't think the Canucks are going to be a serious contender next year. But when you look at these guys like Jake Virtanen, you mentioned Bo Horvat, you know, whether they take a Dubois or a Tkachuk with the fifth overall pick, they're going to have a lot of good young players. But how quickly those players develop is going to go a long way in determining how quickly they turn this thing around. Because Edmonton and Calgary are also developing a great stable of young prospects. And when you look at Vancouver, sure, they've got a good goaltender in Ryan Miller.
Thatcher Demko's coming through.
And Thatcher Demko, you have good depth in goal. And on defense, though, you don't have that same depth. So maybe you do use that fifth pick to take Olli Juolevi or Sergachev or Jacob Chychrun, even though a lot of people think those defensemen aren't going to go till 6, 7, 8, 9.
Don't you have to get in your succession plan for the Sedins, though?
Yes.
Like, Bo Horvat is not a number one center. Brandon Sutter is certainly not a number one center.
I think Brandon Sutter is a third-line center on a good team. I really like Brandon Sutter. But for years, he was on Pittsburgh as a third-line center. When they moved him up to second-line center, he just doesn't have that offensive ability, Rich.
Right.
So I think he is a third-line center and a good third-line center, obviously, with the bloodlines being a Sutter. But I agree with you. I think right now, the Sedins are in the final year of their contract. Are they back for a year after next year? I would have to think this is their last year in the NHL.
It's tough to tell there.
We'll ask Ed Willis about that.
We will. Ed Willis of the Vancouver Province will join us at, 11:30 to talk about this trade from the Vancouver perspective. And next segment, we're going to have George Richards on to talk about it from the Florida Panthers perspective. George Richards of the Miami Herald. Ezzy, McCann, you talked about this a little bit. So you trade McCann, who's a former first-round pick, last year per first-round pick. He played in his 2014, first-round pick.
Yep. 24th overall.
Are you surprised that they included two draft picks with him in this trade?
Yeah, and Florida lost some draft picks, if you remember, in acquiring, I think it was it the Hudler trade or the Purcell trade?
Both.
Yeah, so they lost draft picks, so they get those draft picks back, so kudos to the Panthers management.
Two of three back, yeah.
For getting those draft picks back in this trade. And I think they saw that Vancouver was willing to part with a little bit more to get Gudbranson. You could say that Gudbranson for McCann straight up might have worked. And it's possible that's what it started off with, and then they threw in those draft picks. But, you know, Rich, you hear about the chances of getting a everyday NHLer decrease into the later round. So if you have a second or third overall pick, second or third round pick.
The second round pick here, as he's 33rd overall, though.
Well, exactly. And this is a deep draft, right?
That's pretty high.
I mean, scouts really like this draft. You're talking about 2010. I mean, if you're able to get, for example, Brock Nelson in 2010 was taken with the last pick, 30th overall, right? So if you're able to get a player like that who can play on your second line, it can turn into a good pick. So I tend to like to trade more for the Florida Panthers. I think Jared McCann is going to be a good NHLer, and you know, he certainly was a good player, a good junior player with the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds. And I think they are a team that has already a group of good young players. He's the type of guy that can complement those players. He's a center that can also play the wing. Maybe he plays with Trocheck on a line. It's possible, right? But again, I don't think it's a bad trade for Vancouver. Travis Yost of TSN wrote an article saying all the possession numbers were terrible, but that's not his game. Eric Gudbranson is not a possession guy. He's a shutdown defenseman. So I don't know if you can say that there was a clear-cut winner in the trade. Maybe the draft picks skewed a little bit towards the Panthers.
Money is also a factor here.
Yeah.
One-year deal just signed by Gudbrandsson recently for 1 year, I think 3.5.
Right.
But he's coming up on UFA status shortly, and that's going to be a big payday for anybody, and a big defenseman like him will likely get a big payday from that.
And you have to think that Eric Gudbrandsson, I mean, Vancouver has to sign him. If they traded for him and he's got 1 year left on his contract, you can't just let him go to unrestricted free agency.
Well, he's
right?
got one more year after this season of RFA, and then he'll be a UFA.
Right.
So, I mean, 2 seasons from UFA status. Yeah, I agree with you. As after this season, you know, he comes in as an RFA, he qualifies for arbitration, and then he could walk his way into UFA status if he wanted to.
And what I also like, Rich, about this trade for Vancouver, I'm not saying that I think they won the trade, but they're not bringing in Eric Gudbrandsson to be their number one defenseman. I mean, Alex Edler's their number one defenseman right now.
And Tanev is number one on the right side.
Right. And so Eric Gudbrandsson's a guy they look at and they say, okay, he's 24 years old. He's a big body, defensive defenseman. He's a guy that we can have on our second pair for the next 5 to 10 years, right? That's what I think they're looking at. And with Jared McCann, they already have a bunch of young prospects. We talked about that. Jake Virtanen and Bo Horvat. They have the 5th overall
pick. Brock Besser is the best prospect.
Brock Besser
and
UND.
Are their best prospects.
We both saw Brock Besser play UND. He
really
was arguably one of the best players in all of college hockey.
Yes.
So he's not going to play for the Canucks next year, but he'll probably be in the NHL in a couple years from now, Rich.
I think it's whenever he wants to come.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, is when he's going to be in the NHL. Let's go to break. When we come back, George Richards of the Miami Herald is going to give us the Florida Panthers perspective on this move. You're listening to the Legal Curve Radio Hockey Show, live on TSN 1290. Two-thirds of the way through the show already, as you
keep playing the hip, baby. We're playing the hip all day long, every single break, coming out of every break. Love it.
Rory McGoran, he's doing a great job today, operating, producing. He's seen him 6 times. That voice you just heard is Ezra Ginsberg. I'm Richard Pollack, and this segment's brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and the home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Ezzy, we're going to have George Richards join us in a second here. You know, from the Florida perspective, McCann, does he line up? Probably lines up on the left wing, you'd think, to start off with because of the depth they have up front, up the middle, especially with Barkov, Trocheck, and Bukestad. George Richards now joins us on the line. George, thanks for joining us this morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you this morning?
Pretty well, George. And, you know, you're probably thinking, okay, prepping for the draft, maybe some free agency, and then a trade breaks in the middle of the playoffs. Does that catch you off guard?
Oh, absolutely. It caught me off guard. You don't see that too often, especially for, you know, a guy that has kind of become a stalwart here in South Florida, and Eric Gudbrandsson, the guy they drafted 6 years ago. He's just finished his 5th season with the team. It was a bit of a surprise, especially the timing of it. And, you know, 8:30 on a Wednesday night, you're not expecting a trade going down.
Yeah, exactly. And you mentioned Gudbrandsson. He just signed a 1 year deal, but there was a lot of talk that he was going to be signing an extension to kind of tack on to that. What do you think happened, and why do you think that the team made the decision to move him?
Well, you know, various reasons. I mean, I was told they never really got to a long-term deal. They never, you know, I had heard from one person that there was a 4-year deal out there that turned out to be refuted by the team and by the agent. So, you know, it was just a short-term deal. You know, he was going to, that brought him into 1 year before unrestricted free agency. I'm just guessing that the Panthers just have a lot of depth defensively. Michael Matheson just came up before the end of the season and ended up looking terrific in the 5 games he played in the playoffs. Looked like, you know, he'd been there all, you know, for the last 5 years. And then went to the World Championships and was outstanding. So I think, you know, with the emergence of Michael Matheson, they've got a couple other young defensemen coming up. I think the numbers were just not there, and they knew that Eric Gudbrandsson had some value out there. So the numbers just weren't going to work. We knew somebody had to move. I mean, when you looked at the Panthers' defensive depth, not everybody could stay. We knew they were going to have to make some hard decisions, and Eric Gudbrandsson was the guy who went.
Yeah, George, you mentioned hard decisions, and They have another hard decision to make relating to Brian Campbell, who's a pending unrestricted free agency. Unrestricted free agent. What do you think the chances are that Brian Campbell is going to be coming back with the Florida Panthers?
Well, it sounds like they've been talking to him. I know that, you know, during the season, Dale talked to his agent and, you know, some things went down. And it, you know, after the season, apparently they've talked. You know, we talked to Tom Rowe on Wednesday during the trade call, and he told us that, you know, they've made it known that they want Brian Campbell back, and then that Brian Campbell, as a free agency, has the right to check out what he's worth on the open market. So it sounds like if Brian Campbell comes back to the Florida Panthers, it wouldn't be until after July 1. You know, things can change, obviously. We'll see what happens. But I think Brian and his agent are going to see what's out there for him. I think there's some teams that would like to have Brian Campbell, obviously not at the money he was making before, but, you know, he's still a valuable commodity to a number of teams, and we'll see what happens. But I think, you know, the odds are still pretty good that he comes back. I'm not going to say, you know, 70% or anything like that, but I think Brian Campbell really likes it here in Florida, and, you know, there's a chance that he does come back for sure.
Is he going to have to take a pay cut to stay with Florida?
Well, considering he was making $7.5 million last year, yeah, I think he's going to take a pay cut anywhere he goes. those, you know, that huge deal he signed 8 years ago, he's going to take a pay cut. There's no doubt about it.
George, what do you think is, back to Gibranson for a little bit here, what do you think is the ceiling for him?
Who's this?
Gibranson, going back to him for a second.
Oh, good, Brent. Yeah, the ceiling for him? He's a very solid defenseman, doesn't bring you much offense, but is very tough to play against, hard up in the corners, up against the boards, moves the puck pretty well. You know, he is what he is. I mean, I think he had his best season this year. The Panthers, you know, were very happy with the season he had this year. But again, I think he's, you know, doesn't have much offense. The Panthers were looking for some offensive play. And that's why I think it's imperative, you know, for them to bring back a guy like Brian Campbell that helps their power play. They can move the puck a little bit better. But we'll have to see on that. But as far as Gabranson goes, he's just a tough defenseman, very good in his own zone. And, you know, I know a lot of the numbers don't show him very in a high manner, but I think he's a pretty strong player.
Joined by George Richards of the Miami Herald, talking about the Eric Gibranson trade to Vancouver for Jared McCann and draft picks. Jared McCann, George, where do you see him fitting in with the Florida Panthers? Do you see him in a top nine wing role to start off with?
Yeah, I definitely see that. I think he. The Panthers, you know, look at him down the road as a top six guy, but I think right now penciled in probably third line left wing to start. You know, the Panthers have tried to upgrade that third line at the trade deadline by bringing in Yuri Hudler and Teddy Purcell. For various reasons, it just didn't work. I mean, mainly because the centers, you know, kept getting hurt. You know, Nick Bjugstad was there, and then Vinny Trocheck got hurt, so Bjugstad went up to the second line, and then it was mix and match there on that third line. But I think they see a permanent pairing, at least for the next year, I guess, you know, with McCann and Bjugstad. So that seems like it could be a good little mix.
George, you just mentioned Vincent Trocheck, and I saw you tweeting about it a couple of days ago, tweeting that the Florida Panthers and Vincent Trocheck are close to signing a six-year contract. He certainly had a breakout year this year with 25 goals and 53 points. Do you expect that contract to get done before the draft?
Before the draft, yeah. I mean, I don't know if they're close. I mean, I don't even think they're going to start talking, but I know the Panthers are going to have that on have offered that, and the Panthers are offering a six-year deal. You know, they really are high on Vincent Trocheck. They really want to get him here. Right now, the difference is money. I think both sides are kind of agreed on the term. But they're really going to sit down this week and maybe hammer something out. But as far as being close, I'm not going to say that. But, you know, it sounds good. I think this is a good fit for Vincent. He was a third-round pick by the Panthers, really had a breakout year. Looks like he's going to center that second line. It seems to be a real good fit with him and UC Jokinen. So we'll see what happens. But before the draft, yeah, I think they'll have something done before then.
Joined by George Richards of the Miami Herald. George, you tweeted out yesterday that it sounds like the Panthers are out on Alexander Radulov.
Yeah, now that they've got McCann in there, I mean, that was the place they were going to put Radulov. They were going to put him on that third line, see if that would work. And now that you've got McCann, they've also got a bunch of young guys. They've got a lot of, again, you know, Erica Branson wasn't the only guy that was going to be a victim of numbers here in Florida. The Panthers have a lot of talented young players, and there doesn't seem to be spots for all of them. And it's a good problem to have. Absolutely for Florida, but you know, they just don't have the room. I mean, so now they've got McCann, they don't really have any room for an Alexander Radulov.
George, I'm surprised we've left this hard-hitting question till now, but you've covered the Panthers for many years. What do you think of the new logo?
Yeah, it's gonna be kind of wild, you know, to see a new logo. They've had the same one since 1993. I think it looks pretty cool. I mean, I'd like to see what it looks like on hats and shirts and all that kind of stuff. The jerseys look very cool. You know, a lot of people, you know, it's 50-50 down here. You know, people don't like change and stuff, and other people do. But I think it looks cool and classic, and I think it'll eventually grow on people. Because it just has that, you know, classic look. So I think people will dig it out over time.
George, earlier in the, just a week or two ago, John Madden was let go as an assistant coach. Is Gerard Gallant any closer to naming an assistant coach or two to his staff?
Not that I know of. I mean, I'm sure Gerard's been interviewing guys. I know Gerard had a short list of guys he wanted to bring in, guys who are close to that he's known over the years, guys that he's admired as coaches from afar. It's his call. They're adding two coaches. They you know, John Madden and the Panthers parted ways. So there's an opening there, and they're going to add an additional staff member. So Gerard's got two guys he gets to hire. But as far as being any closer, I haven't heard anything on that front.
George Richards of the Miami Herald, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Legal Curve Hockey Show, and hopefully we'll catch you up with you after the draft.
Yep, sounds good. We'll talk.
Thanks a lot, George.
There you go. I mean, the Florida perspective of that trade is interesting. We're going to have Ed Willies on of the Vancouver province to talk about the Vancouver perspective. But you see it there, you know, George, talking about Florida being able to add picks, get a guy in McCann to kind of solidify your top nine role to fill in the spots that Hudler and Purcell, who were rentals at the end of the season, the spots that they had taken. And, of course, as you mentioned earlier, getting a couple of the draft picks back that you traded away earlier on, it allows you to prepare for this draft and continue to have the players coming through the system.
Well, especially considering that the Florida Panthers don't have a high draft pick, right? So you're talking Gudbranson was 2010 third overall. Ekblad, yep, was drafted high in 2014, Huberto, right? So they don't have a high pick. They have 23rd overall pick. So it's important to get those later round picks.
You know what? It's going to be interesting to see what happens there, and Brian Campbell's another one. As you know, what happens with him? Where does he go? I feel like he's got to be comfortable there, and he sees the team on an upward trajectory. You wonder if he's going to want to uproot his family and go elsewhere. He's played in, aside from hopping around from Buffalo to San Jose, he played in Chicago and Florida for, well, the last 10 years or so, right? So, or like 8 years at least. Anyhow, World Cup rosters came out earlier this week. In fact, they came out yesterday. The final rosters, and some of the rosters were already named, but the final rosters came out. I think six Winnipeg Jets were on these rosters. I got the mail out about every team had a certain amount of players. The Jets have six, which is more than a fair amount of squads. We're going to break down those rosters, even though I can't stand this tournament. We're going to break down the rosters. We're going to talk about some of the notable omissions and whether or not we're actually looking forward to this tournament or not. You're listening to Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
The Curve Crew are back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
All right. So I got the mail out here for the final rosters for the World Cup. get from, you know, the NHLPA here, sends out the mailouts. The Canadian team's an interesting one.
I like the Jake Muzzin pick.
That's probably the one surprise on the Canadian team. Maybe the Corey Perry omission because he just went to World Championships and had the C and won and has been on, and obviously didn't play well in the playoffs, granted. But
Taylor Hall as well.
Yeah, I was not as shocked about Taylor Hall as I was about Perry.
Taylor Hall gets criticized for his hockey sense. Sometimes, I mean, he certainly got the physical attributes.
Yeah.
I like Taylor Hall. I think he's a very good player. But when you're talking about Team Canada, especially, Rich, we say this year after year, you could ice a Team Canada B, and that team could beat a lot of other teams. So it doesn't mean that these guys aren't good players. They just are beat out by better players, right? Or at least what the management thinks are better fits for the team.
So these are the players added to the roster as you: Brent Burns, Jake Muzzin, Pietrangelo on St. Louis, Matt Duchene, Claude Giroux, Brad Marchand, and Joe Thornton.
Love that Joe Thornton's included, and I love that Brad Marchand's included. Joe Thornton, a guy who was not on the 2014 Olympic team, by the way. Neither was Giroux.
Right, yeah, I know. I mean,
so those two guys, and I mean, this is a different tournament, Rich, and I know you're going to have something to say about this tournament because it's not an IIHF tournament.
Well, it's not so much an IIHF, it's an NHL. It's not best on best. I mean, if Canada, if they should be hoping, and it's obviously in Toronto, they should be hoping Canada doesn't play the U.S. because in reality they won't have all their best squad. Like, would McDavid be on this team?
I would say yes.
Well, let's go to Team North America first.
I think
second,
Austin Matthews probably makes the U.S. team. He played pro last year.
Let's go to the Canadian team. I mean, the North American team, okay? So they had Gostisbehere, Parayko, Trouba, Drouin, Matthews, Nugent-Hopkins, and Scheifele. Do you think any of those guys make the U.S. or Canada? And we haven't talked about Ekblad, Seth Jones, Ryan Murray, Morgan Riley, McKinnon. I mean, you're telling me that Dylan Larkin wouldn't make the U.S. team? I mean, I know Kessel didn't make the team. Brandon Saad?
Tyler Johnson didn't make the team either.
Tyler Johnson didn't make the team. I mean, why is he not in the U.S. team?
He was one of the top players for Tampa in the playoffs.
Isn't he the second-line center on that team?
Yeah, exactly. I think when you look at these teams, again, and you know, we know dating back to 2010 Olympic team, even before that, Rich, Team Canada likes to have a left shot with a right shot defenseman, right?
Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's,
and yeah. I think, you know, Brent Burns has 75 points during the regular season. He's been one of the best defensemen in the playoffs. I think he deserves to make this team, but he essentially makes the team over a guy like Chris Letang, and Jake Muzzin makes the team over a guy like maybe Jay Bouwmeester, who was on the Olympic team. There were certainly other players, or Mark Giordano. Mark Giordano was a little bit surprising that he didn't make this team. But again, Giordano, maybe he hasn't played for Team Canada as much. I don't know why. Giordano is an excellent defenseman. He could have easily made the team. But it goes back to this, Rich. There are only so many spots, right? Mm-hmm. There are only 8 defensemen that can be taken. There are only 3 goalies that can be taken, 14 forwards that can be taken, right? So
these are the Jets that are on the team, obviously. Winnipeg fans want to know which Jets are on the teams. Pavlik's on Team Czech Republic. Connor Hellebuck's on the North American team, along with Scheifele and Trouba. I think you'd say all those are warranted. Scheifele's really a shoo-in to me, the way he's been playing. Bufflin's on the American team, and Blake Wheeler. Ivan Telegin, is actually on Team Russia, but they have him under the KHL. Well,
why is Voyanov on Team Russia? He's not playing.
Yeah, I don't think he's playing.
Why would they even name him to the team if they knew that he wasn't going to play? That's what I was curious about.
Why is this tournament only in Toronto?
There's a lot of questions, Richie, but not a lot of answers. And, you know, if in an ideal world, Rich, I subscribe to the belief that I'm a Canada Cup guy. So I'm not saying that this should be called the Canada Cup, mm-hmm. but I like the format of the Canada Cup. Like, for me, an ideal World Cup of hockey tournament is 8 teams. And you have a final, which is a best-of-3 final.
What about the Team Europe? Well, who thought of this tournament is what I want to know.
Nikolai Ehlers should have been on Team Europe, I think. Nikolai Ehlers, I think, deserves to be in the World Cup of Hockey. That's an aside. Like, Marian Gaborik was named to Team Europe, for example. Gaborik didn't have a very good regular season. To me, you look at Team Europe, and they're certainly not very strong on defense. They're a little older, you know, with guys like Zdeno Chara, right? So
how do you grow the game? I know we've talked about this in the show before. How do you grow the game, Ezzy, if you're breaking up all of these European countries and making them one team?
Right, and it goes back to what we talked about when the World Cup of Hockey format was announced, right? They decided that instead of having, like we talked about, 8 countries and then certain countries not making it, they decided to put a team together of players who probably wouldn't be in this tournament regardless. So it's kind of inclusion, I think, from the NHL and NHLPA perspective. Hey, Rich, I'm in agreement with you. The format is fine. My interest level for the World Cup of Hockey, I think, is going to be moderate. I'm going to watch it. I mean, I'm going to get excited for the World Cup of Hockey, but my excitement level, I was talking to someone about this earlier in the week. I was probably more excited for the World Hockey Championship this year with Laine playing, Matthews playing, top prospects, and then you had Connor McDavid in the tournament, and you had it in Russia, and you had Finland with the opportunity to be the first country to ever win the World Under-18s, the World Under-20s, and then the World Championship.
You should mention that Laine is on Team Finland, so if the Jets draft him, they'll actually have 8 guys in this tournament.
Well, and Puljujarvi isn't
right
in the tournament,
yeah,
which was a little bit of a surprise. I mean, you can't have too many 18-year-olds, I guess, right? But I look at this tournament, and the same countries are favored. I mean, it's still Canada, U.S. I think Sweden's defense is maybe the second best to Canada's.
Mm-hmm.
I think Finland is going to be a threat in this tournament. But I agree with you, Rich. You're trying to grow the game. Is this going to grow the game?
You're trying to grow the pocketbooks. I mean, you're trying to get a revenue stream, right? I mean, it's a PA-sanctioned event. The NHL and NHLPA work well together when it's focused on strictly making money and not taking it from each other.
Right.
Right? That's a big thing.
And the thing that we said at the time that was a little bit concerning is if you're deciding to go with this format, the North America and the Team Europe, you have to stay with that. Because if you really want this to be a tournament that takes place every 4 years, you can't keep changing the format. And we saw that from 1996, an 8-year gap to the next World Cup of Hockey. And then there wasn't a World Cup of Hockey for 12 years. So I'm pretty sure that the NHL and the NHLPA want this to be a regular event. But if you're going to have a regular event like this, you can't switch the format every time.
Or you make it a Canadian event. And what Hockey Canada, I guess the NHL here, but Hockey Canada for the World Juniors, you have to stop making these events all taking place in Toronto, Montreal. If it's an event for the country, then you have to spread out the games around. So if this is a Canadian-hosted event, like if I were to plan this event, nobody's asked me, but if I were to plan this event, it would be hosted by Canada this time. Okay, it's a World Cup. Like the World Cup of Soccer, it's hosted by a certain country. It'd be hosted by Canada.
Like the World Hockey Championship, next year it's in Paris.
Yeah, Paris and Germany, right?
Yeah.
Or France and Germany.
Yeah.
So if Canada's hosting the 2016 World Cup, they play games around the country.
Yep.
The Canada games are going to be the ones in most demand, but you play a game in Winnipeg, a game in Calgary, a game in Vancouver, Edmonton, all that.
Yep.
Okay?
Great idea.
And then you have your final game wherever. Fine. You're going to have it in Toronto or Montreal. I can understand that. But having all the games there makes no sense to me. And then in 4 years, you should have it in, Sweden. And you play your games in Sweden. And that's where it is. So too bad about the time change. And then you have it in the States 1 year. To me, that's how you grow the game. You don't throw every game in Toronto.
I wouldn't disagree with you, Rich. But at the end of the day, this is the format, right? And I think that
I can't see this format not being torched.
I agree. But that's exactly what we were just saying. Why would you pick a format that you're gonna just change after, right? I mean, like, whether or not you like the Canada Cup, as far as I'm concerned, the greatest hockey was played during the Canada Cup. So you're going back to 72, continuing in 76, and even 1991.
87 could arguably be the best hockey you'll ever see.
And the World Cup of Hockey in 1996 still held some of those traditions that the Canada Cup had, right? Like, you had them in the same kind of cities as the Canada Cup was in, right? So I still like that format. I think you go the top 8 countries. If you want to have a entrance round or whatever for the final 2 countries, do that. I think we know what the top countries are going to be in that tournament. You're going to have Canada, U.S., Russia, Sweden, Finland, Czech Republic. So if you need to determine the last 2 countries by having some type of play-in tournament, do that. But I agree with you. I mean, the format's not my favorite, but I'm still going to watch the tournament because you're still going to have a best-on-best format. There's going to be a lot of good hockey.
You have more of the best players there, but I don't think you get the 2 best teams there, is what I would say. This format allows more of the best players in the league to play, but at the end of the day, you're not going to get the best team against the best team.
No, this won't be the 2014 Olympics.
That's right.
You won't have the best teams in the best countries and the best players. A lot of good players aren't in this tournament, and a lot of players that really shouldn't be there aren't there because they're on countries that wouldn't be represented.
Fair enough. Big omissions. Let's go quickly through the list. Scott Burnside of ESPN had a good article about omissions.
Well, PK Subban.
More surprise. Let's go through team by team. Are more surprised by Kessel or Tyler Johnson being off US?
Probably Tyler Johnson, actually. I mean, Kessel's been fantastic in the playoffs, Rich. But Tyler Johnson, as you said, would probably, you could argue, would be their second center after Pavelski.
More surprised by Letang or Subban?
I'd say Subban.
Yeah? Because he was on the Olympic team last time, even though he didn't play much?
Yes.
Because Letang has been better. At least lately.
I think Letang was better. Yeah, you can make that argument.
Boone Jenner, surprise him or Robbie Fabry on the
they're both really good players.
Surprise, which one surprises you more?
I'd probably say Robbie Fabry, just the way he played in the playoffs. But Boone Jenner is a very solid guy. He's more of like, he's a role player.
But he can score too.
Yeah.
Kovalchuk or Radulov?
Kovalchuk. Kovalchuk, if I'm not mistaken, was the captain. Was he not the captain of the team in Sochi?
He might have been. I don't remember. It's a good question.
But he's certainly a top player still. I don't think Russian hockey is very happy with him.
You surprised Klingberg's not in Team Sweden?
Yes. He didn't play well in the playoffs, though.
He didn't. That was one thing you can say about it is playoff play certainly factored into selection.
And look at the defensemen they have, Richie. Oliver Ekman-Larsson, Victor Hedman, Anton Strahlman.
Yeah, you could argue.
Nicholas Jalmerson.
You could argue it's the best defense in the tournament.
Still think Canada has
the
best.
I do too.
Yeah. But Sweden's number two.
I think Sweden's number two.
Yeah.
Interesting nonetheless. When we come back, Ed Willies, former Winnipeg Sun Rider. You can ask him about the old retro game coming up here in October. Is he going to be coming in to cover some of the old Jets? You can ask him about that, but we're going to focus on the Vancouver perspective of the Gudbrandsson for McCann trade. That's up next on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
Sundown in the Paris of the Prairie. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Only 30 minutes left. Flying by this Saturday morning. Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, Rory McGoran. Doing a great job. The segment's brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, the official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information or to make an appointment, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
Rich, are we going to have to wear mouth guards during the Riverview Cycle on Life?
I never actually borrowed your bike. I don't even know if I can ride a bike.
Like I said last week, if you can finish law school, I'm pretty sure you can ride a bike. It's not that hard. Like, one thing I noticed about my bike is the seat isn't very comfortable. Like, I noticed that if
you don't have a banana seat?
It's not a banana seat, but I feel like I could use a new seat. I just feel like I kind of get that, that pinching feeling, if you know what I mean.
That's why you keep getting off, making all the stops to get all the chips
and
taquitos.
It's easier just to stop and go to a convenience store and then finish the bike ride as opposed to going on a long bike ride. But next week, 25 clicks.
Yeah, no, 25 clicks. That ain't short. We're waiting on Ed Willis of the Vancouver province to join us here to talk about the Jared McCann, Eric Gudbrandsson trade from the Vancouver perspective, just having trouble getting a hold of him. Ezzy, I don't think we expect too many other trades before the end of the final here. But people don't realize, the combine's coming up this week.
Yes.
And station manager Chris Brooke was just telling us that Gary Lawless is going to have an interview coming up with Patrick Laine. So that'll be of interest, obviously, to Jets fans. It seems to be the pick that everybody's getting geared up about. But, the combine's coming up. That's going to garner some attention. And then the draft is coming around the corner here. And then, of course, you have the free agency period, the discussion before. You have the new discussion period before free agency. So it's going to be an action-packed next month or so in terms of moves and happenings around the league, especially as you're hearing a lot of chatter. I'm hearing a lot of chatter about the fact that there's a possible expansion draft next year. So players, teams with the luxury, you mentioned earlier in the show, teams with the luxury of having good players, too many almost, are going to try to make moves to turn those players into assets that they can protect.
Right, and we talked about Tampa Bay with Ben Bishop and Andre Vasilevsky having to decide which goalie you protect because you can only protect one goalie. And you mentioned it last week, Rich, Marc-Andre Fleury, Matt Murray in Pittsburgh. Do the Pittsburgh Penguins now, with Matt Murray and how he has played in the playoffs, do they decide to move Marc-Andre Fleury to a team like Dallas, who desperately needs a number one goaltender? Okay. Certainly a goaltender that will play better than Kari Lehtinen and Antti Niemi played in the playoffs, right? So that, and we're just talking about goalies there. Those are hard decisions to make. As far as other signings across the NHL, there's no shortage of intriguing storylines. I mean, look at the Winnipeg Jets. Still, we haven't talked about it a lot because the Jets got the second overall pick, and that's kind of taken over the headlines.
Mm-hmm.
But Mark Scheifele and Jacob Trouba are both RFAs, right? And both of those players we expect to be signed long-term. There's always a chance that one of those players signs a bridge contract, Richie, but Vincent Trocheck's another guy in Florida. There's no shortage of guys across the league that have to sign contracts, whether those are pending UFAs or pending RFAs. So I agree with you. And with the draft and the intrigue involving Austin Matthews, Patrick Laine, Puljujarvi, and a team like the Edmonton Oilers dropping down to fourth, you have to think that there's a good chance that there will be trades, big trades I'm talking about, at the draft. I mean, Eric Branson for Jared McCann, that's not an insignificant trade. You're talking about a top four defenseman and a guy who could be a future top six forward. So I agree with you. I think it is going to be a very busy offseason, and it's probably going to be busy in the weeks leading up to the draft.
And there's a few teams where you go over, you know, who they would protect. You mentioned some of the goaltending issues. That's, you know, does Tampa Bay get in there, Ezzy? Do they say, hey, you know, we don't want to have to, you know, I guess technically they would have Bishop being a pending UFA, so maybe they leave it for now. But they have other signings they have to make. You mentioned Pittsburgh. What if Calgary wants to get in on that? You know, are Dallas and Calgary fighting over a guy like Fleury?
Calgary needs to improve their goaltending, absolutely.
Brad Treliving has said as much at his press conference when he let go Bob Hartley.
Yep. And, you know, Calgary right now is clearly in a situation where they think that if they make one or two right moves, they can get back into the playoffs. They're a team that has been outside looking in for far too long. They got into the playoffs unexpectedly 2 years ago. But all of the young talent they have, that defense they had, bringing in Dougie Hamilton last year at the draft, I think you could expect the Calgary Flames to be active, and they're going to have another high pick, maybe not as high as they wanted. They were hoping to maybe get the second or third overall pick, but they're still going to get a high pick. So I think you're right. There are no shortage of teams that are going to be looking to improve themselves. And even if the Winnipeg Jets decide to hold on to the second overall pick, there's no indication that they won't. The Jets are also going to be one of those teams, I think, that are going to be active. You know, we haven't talked about it a lot, but you have players like Drew Stafford and Matthew Perreault in the last year of their contract. So do they look at moving one of those guys potentially? Do the Jets look at maybe moving a prospect? Now that they're going to have Kyle Connor and Patrick Laine in the lineup, do they look at moving a young prospect like a Marco Dano or possibly a Joel Armia or an Alexander Burmistrov? There are only so many forward spots on this team, Richie, and you know, you're going to have two rookies most likely in the lineup this year. So maybe they move someone to maybe address a need at D, right? We've talked about the Jets being in desperate need of a shutdown defenseman. So it could be a lot of moves.
Are you surprised? I'm switching over to the AHL for a second. We haven't talked about this at all. You know, when your team is not in it, if the Moose are not in it, then the attention is not being paid to the AHL. But, of course, Toronto Maple Leafs fans have been paying a lot of attention to the AHL playoffs. Are you surprised? I mean, we haven't, you know, we've caught a few AHL games this year. Are you surprised the Leafs are down 3-0 to the Hershey Bears?
A little bit, just because the Toronto Marlies have been such a good regular season team. The Hershey Bears are...
Sorry, down 3-1, excuse me.
The Hershey Bears are an excellent team as well. We talked about that year after year. They seem to be there, but, I mean, look, things happen, and hopefully they can come back, but it's going to be definitely tough to overcome that series deficit.
And, you know, it's interesting, Ezzy, to me, you look at the Leafs and winning there, right? You have a lot of young talent. And so the mix of young talent and winning, and Pascal Vincent, who joined us earlier in the show, you talked about building for the Winnipeg Jets. I think you, if you're an organization, you hope to get to a point where winning at the AHL level and winning at the NHL level are one and the same. That's not very easy, though. Like, you're seeing a Toronto Marlies club that has all of these players that came down from the big club playing, you know, fairly significant roles. Nylander, for example. Other guys that they've relied on to put up points. So can you win you know, how many teams can win at the AHL and the NHL level at the same time? I mean, on the other side of the bracket in the AHL, the Ontario Reign, are there for the Kings. So that probably is a good sign for the Kings organization. But at the same time, you know, we talk about turning over your roster. We haven't really talked at all as about the LA Kings. Like, they're in a pretty difficult situation. If you look at the Los Angeles Kings right now and their cap situation, and we're going to get to a next segment about the change in captaincy, that kind of went under the radar. That was a little Friday nugget, you know, put out to the media, because to me, that's not an insignificant story.
No.
But you look at the LA Kings, they already have $66 million committed for next year. And they need to shore up that defense, don't they? They need to add to that top four defense, because you saw in the playoffs when Alec Martinez went out, I mean, they had nothing after Muzzin and Doughty, who were both Canadian World Cup players. So that's another team I think is not getting enough attention in terms of what needs to be done there.
Yeah, they need to bring in a defenseman, Rich. There are a lot of question marks. There are Lucic and Le Cavalier coming back. How much are you going to give a guy like Tyler Toffoli? I think Tyler Toffoli is an excellent player, and I would expect them to sign Tyler Toffoli long-term. But you're right. Yeah. They've had salary cap issues that have haunted them for 2 years now, and it's a team that they have to make the right moves, because you certainly don't have enough high-end prospects. The LA Kings have not been drafting high enough and haven't been developing players, I think, that are ready to step into the NHL. Not to say that their AHL system isn't good. I'm talking about higher-end prospects. I mean, this is a team that has that win-now attitude, right? So I would expect them to be one of those other teams that are active in free agency.
And you know, tough decisions need to be made. Of course, they lost in the conference finals in the AHL, and the Bears are one game away from going to the finals. But
no, what's interesting about Hershey, they have Madison Bowie, of Manitoba, mm-hmm. and many people think Madison Bowie is a guy that's going to be able to step into the NHL with the Washington Capitals. You talk about D-depth, Rich, with Alec Martinez in L.A. You know, when Washington had problems down the stretch in the playoffs with their depth defenseman, when they brought in a guy like Mike Weber, he struggled
that's
a little
right.
bit. Bowie's a guy that's had a very good playoffs in the AHL, and they think that he's ready to take the next step next year.
I think you're starting to see the turnover. We talked about it earlier as... What's the turnover of these rosters? Because the Edmonton Oilers and the Jets and the Flames and the Coyotes are coming. Are the Canucks going to be part of that? Ed Willis isn't here, so we don't know. We can give our own opinion. But I think it's worth exploring. I think we're starting, you know, I think the name value of some of these teams, you know, you think of this team being that dominant squad. St. Louis Blues, tough decisions need to be made. And you're going to start seeing that change, I think, pretty soon, because we talked about it, in a cap system and the parity of the league, you're forced to turn over.
A team like the LA Kings, Rich, will be fine, because Jonathan Quick is one of the top goaltenders. Drew Doughty's the best defenseman in the NHL. You have guys like Kopitar and Jeff Carter and Tyler Toffoli. They'll be good. But
you're drafting low every year,
good
right?
Good doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to go far in the playoffs. Good can get you into the playoffs, but it's that depth that really gets you farther, and that's what we're seeing with Pittsburgh and San Jose and we saw with Tampa and St. Louis, right? You have to surround your core players with quality players, and a lot of the times you have to get those guys on shorter-term contracts or via trade, because your roster is continuously recycling, right?
And imagine if the Mike Richards contract situation actually hurt them more than it is. Imagine that. What would the Kings be doing now? That's a big break they got.
They'd be in big trouble.
What happens with Mike Richards?
Mike Richards was not good in the Stanley Cup playoffs. I know that because I took him in three pools and he didn't get
three.
Any points for me.
Wow.
He slowed down, Rich. We've talked about it
yeah.
in previous shows. I still think he could probably land a one-year contract with a team, but I don't know how many more years he has in the NHL, just because he was given an opportunity to on the fourth line and the third line of the Washington
yeah,
Capitals.
He was given a pretty good opportunity.
A very good Capitals team, and he wasn't able to produce, wasn't able to keep up. So I'm not sure what his future is.
And when he was on with Hustler and Lawless earlier in the year, later in the season, he talked about, you know, how he was kind of accepting the role in Washington on a winning team.
Right.
But that he thought he could add more, and he was adding, you know, playing the role that he kind of was accepting the role that they gave him, but thought he could add more. And I realized that champion-type players like Mike Richards believe they can add more.
A player like Richards has got to play with an edge. He's got to be in on the forecheck. He's got to be
but can he add any more, Ez?
I don't know. I mean, he certainly wasn't doing it this year. He didn't have the same impact with the Capitals that he did in the years that the LA Kings were winning the Stanley Cup, not only was Richard scoring goals, but he was mixing it up. Like he would lay a big body check, blocking shots, stuff like that. Still a very smart player.
He's very smart.
But I don't know if he has enough of an impact on a game to play at the level anymore.
Does he get
what do I know, though?
One-way deal? Well, does he get a one-way deal?
I think that he will get another one-way deal with a team.
But 1 year
I'm
max.
I'm not sure who signs him. But
1 year max.
Probably, huh?
But one way. It's interesting. It'll be interesting to see. We're going to go to break, but when we come back, one final segment, it'll be rapid fire. The focus of rapid fire, though, will be Dustin Brown, stripped of the captaincy in the Los Angeles Kings locker room. That has big-time ramifications. We're going to break that down after the break. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
On the Curve, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
All right. One final segment on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Blue Jays baseball starts at 12 noon here. Jays Red Sox after a pretty big win last night for the Blue Jays, although Troy Tulowitzki now is hitting the DL, 15-day DL, so the Jays will have to overcome that. Ezra Ginsberg, I'm Richard Pollock. Rory McGoran has done an awesome job. He's done a great job with everything today. The hip playing in and out of every segment has been terrific. This segment's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com.
Rapid fire.
38-year-old, Ezzy. 38-year-old Ottawa Senators defenseman Chris Phillips announced his retirement on Thursday after playing 19 seasons in the NHL. All of those seasons with Ottawa. He had 288 points over just under 1,200 career regular season games, but missed this past season due to back issues. He also had 15 points in 114 career NHL playoff games. Phillips accepted a front office position with the Senators. How will you remember Chris Phillips as a player?
Chris Phillips, what a career. You know, you're talking about Eric Goodbranson, kind of cut from the same cloth, Rich, like a defensive defenseman, but a very intelligent defenseman. I've been a fan of Chris Phillips since he was drafted first overall by the Ottawa Senators. I remember he was a really good junior, winning gold in 95 and 96 for Team Canada. I'll remember him as just being a defenseman that played the game right, and I'm the type of guy that loves that physical type of defenseman. Like, I'm a huge Scotty Stevens fan, so I like those defensemen that play with that physical edge. So I'll just remember him for being such an excellent defenseman defensively, and the type of guy that, you know, when he was called upon by Team Canada, he played in the World Championships. A guy who, he's not going to be a Hockey Hall of Famer, Rich.
Right.
He's a guy that didn't put up big offensive numbers, but he played 100-plus NHL playoff games. You know, in the early 2000s, mid-2000s, those really good Ottawa Senator teams that had Marian Hossa and those types of players, Daniel Alfredson, of course, but they can never get past the Toronto Maple Leafs. Remember, Toronto Maple Leafs would always defeat the Ottawa Senators, but Chris Phillips was always such a big part of that defense. So I'll always remember him as just being such a solid player. And, you know, it's rare nowadays for a defenseman to play 19 years in the NHL. So congratulations to Chris Phillips on a great career. He's going to stick around with the Senators in a management role. And again, you know, I think he had a great career. A guy who you're never going to say is an all-star, maybe, but a guy who you're always going to want on your team.
That's a great way to put it. And that's, you know, 19 seasons, Ezzy. I know he was first overall pick. But 19 seasons is an incredible accomplishment for any player. I think it's an especially incredible accomplishment for a player who, as you mentioned, played a physical style.
Yep.
Like Chris Phillips always went into the corner hard, blocked shots, wasn't afraid to sacrifice his body. And you see, we talked about David Backes early in the show. We talked about Ryan Kelly. Guys like that who play so hard, it's tough for them to play into their mid to late 30s because of the wear and tear. Wendell Clark, Eric Lindros, all these guys. And so to see a guy like him who played a tough game play that long is really is something that he should be certainly be proud of. This past Thursday, as he Dalen Hopkins, I don't know who this is, but it's in the show plan, and you put it there, followed through on a promise that he made on Twitter back in February, if we all follow through on promises we made on Twitter, even though I don't have Twitter, by getting a tattoo of NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman's face on his rear end.
Hold on, you didn't see that?
I heard about it.
Oh, okay.
The promise was made after Hopkins said he would get Bettman's face tattooed on his bum. You wrote this or what? If both Chicago and Los Angeles were bounced out of the playoffs in the first round. If you could get any sports figure's face tattooed on your rear end, who would it be and why? It's a hell of a question.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was also thinking of writing into the show plan, how long do you think before he gets this removed from his rear end?
Well, my question is, how stupid is that bet? I mean, the Chicago-St. Louis series was a complete toss-up. The Kings were a favorite over the Sharks, but it wasn't like they were an overwhelming favorite. I think he kind of wanted this tattoo.
I don't know why anyone would want a tattoo of Bettman on their rear end, but it's a tough one. Like, I think, you know, being from Winnipeg, maybe I'd go with maybe like a Jets logo or Timu Solani.
Is that like a sign of respect or disrespect, though?
Well, I don't think you'd ever get a tattoo out of disrespect. I think,
but you're putting it on your rear end
in this situation. Well, again, actually, I shouldn't cop out because this is a sports figure. It wasn't a sports logo.
Okay. That's right, figure.
Yeah, so it's got to be a player that you really like.
I like the fact that you wrote the question, but have absolutely no idea what the answer would be.
Well, I don't have any tattoos, but you know, maybe I'd go with somebody like Scotty Stevens or Marty Brodeur. But again, I think it's a little bit weird to tattoo that on your rear end. Like, yeah, if you got it somewhere else, let's just say that neither of us are going to be tattooing anything under our rear ends anytime soon.
I think that's a fair
I don't know about Rory, statement. But me personally,
now, Rory,
like,
you know,
like, I'll tell you this much, Richie. A friend of ours, Sean Coe, did this back when we were in high school. I might do this. I would definitely get a maple leaf because I'm a proud Canadian. I might get a maple leaf tattooed on my rear end.
Do his parents know about that, or do they just find out now? Just found out now. Rory, do you have a sports figure that you would tattoo?
No, that's a thinker, man. You know, that's a lifer that's on you. So at the moment, no, I got nothing.
The guy has every answer for Seinfeld trivia.
Yeah, yeah.
And you give him a maybe not a fastball, a bit of a curve.
Yeah,
I'll put you on the spot. We still have a couple more if you want to jump in after.
Tim Tebow.
On Friday, TSN's Frank Saravalli reported that the LA Kings have told Dustin Brown he will no longer be team captain as they plan on going in another direction. Yeah, but I want to continue that reading, you know, the question. But just one second, okay? Dustin Brown is signed through 2022. And he's 31 years old.
Yikes.
So just going different direction, he's still on the team. Okay? Who do you expect to be named the next captain of the Kings? And you've put out Kopitar, Doughty being the two big candidates. I want to hear your answer on that, but I want to also hear your answer or your comments on how they've done this and why you think they've done this.
I think it'll be Kopitar. And I think Doughty will be probably an assistant captain. Not to say that Drew Doughty isn't a leader of this, the main leader of this team, but Kopitar's led the team in scoring year after year. I expect it to be Kopitar. I don't know, Rich. I mean, Dustin Brown in the last 2 years has taken a significant step back.
And he's kind of, we talked about Chris Phillips just a few minutes ago. A guy like Dustin Brown who lays it out there every game, it's tough to maintain that style.
Right, and he's now more of a 25, 30-point guy. He's not a guy that you can play in their top six, so he's more of a third, fourth-line guy.
That's right.
And he's under contract, as you mentioned, for many years.
His cap hit is 5.875.
And when you're looking at, you know, who are the up-and-coming, you know, leaders of your team, you can throw in a guy like Tyler Toffoli, Tanner Pearson, guys like that, right?
But he's still going to be on the team. This is like the Thornton Marlowe thing.
Yeah, but I don't think it's as contentious as the Thornton Marlowe thing. They have their reasons why they're taking the C away from him. I don't know if there's something else going on off the ice or in the dressing room, Rich, but he's been the team captain for 8 years, the longest tenured captain ever in Kings history.
Two cups.
Certainly was a big part of the 2012-2014 cup teams, specifically the 2012 year.
Yes, yeah,
I think he was more of a factor.
Yes.
2014 was more Gabarek and Justin Williams, Rich. But it's unfortunate for Dustin Brown, but hopefully he's able to still have a long NHL career. But I just don't know, as you said, if that, like, Dustin Brown's the type of guy, he would be up in the NHL hits leaders category. Like, he's a physical guy. He can put the puck in the net, but that was part of his game, to play with an edge. Similar to a David Backes, similar to a Ryan Kessler. If he's not playing with that type of edge, he's not going to be as effective.
From his perspective, let me ask you this, because I know we're done here. We're almost done here. How do you walk into the room after being the captain and then walk in without that?
Well, I imagine
and you don't perform.
He'll still have an A.
Sure, but you don't perform. You're not a dominant offensive player like Thornton and Marleau, where you can come back in the room and like Thornton can dominate points wise and still feel like a contributing factor. But you lose the C and you're not a points guy. That's tough.
It is tough, but as a professional hockey player, you have to deal with that, right? You have to deal with the fact that you're not as good as you used to be, and the team wants to go in a different direction, right? He doesn't have a choice.
I'm not surprised that was a Friday. That was a Friday afternoon story, because that's something that I can see where they're going with it. But I think that'll be awfully tough for a guy like Dustin Brown and a warrior like him to stomach. That's it, Ezzy. 3 hours went by pretty quick.
What about Madison Bumgarner?
That's a good one.
That's my lame joke for the day.
Yeah, that's a good one.
You didn't Google that, did you?
No, it came to me.
You Googled, Roy?
Yeah, I Googled best sports figures get tattooed on your posterior.
That's Roy McGoran. Before that, you heard Ezra Ginsberg. I'm Richard Pollock. I want to thank our sponsors for, obviously, their support. Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Riverview Health Center Foundation, Cyclone Life, Keener Jerseys, and Bell Acres and Clear Lake Golf Course. I'd like to thank our guests, George Richards of the Miami Herald, Curtis Pashelka of the San Jose Mercury News, and Pascal Vincent, new head coach of the Manitoba Moose. If you want to hear those interviews or the entire show, they'll be up on leocurve.com later. They'll be up on iTunes. Stay tuned for Toronto Blue Jays baseball coming right up. We'll be here next week, 9 a.m.